A great song, particularly applicable to what we're going to talk about today. Although I must say that that song would be applicable to anything that we'd want to talk about here, at least from in almost any pulpit around. The reason that I say that is that we're looking in Genesis, trying to understand what life is about. Or at least try to get some insight into foundations of life, and that, of course, is what the creation story tells us. Foundations of what mankind is all about. That's particularly important to us because a culture varies dramatically around the world. And culture changes even within any given setting. And certainly we have had the, I'll say experience, I don't know whether it's a privilege or a pleasure, but the experience of watching our culture in this country change radically in the last 20 or 30 years. And so what that does is give us a clue that things are not very stable with mankind, with human beings. Things change. So, what we're here to do, and the reason that we turn to the Scripture, is because we want to understand what God has to say about culture. What God has to say about being a human being. If we go on the assumption that he indeed did make all of this, did indeed record his insights for mankind in the Bible, then of course we have the opportunity to read those words and find out what he's saying. And as it turns out, what he says is often against the grain. Much against the grain. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm glad that what the Scripture says is often against the grain. The reason is that as I watch what humans do with their lives, what humans do when they're left on their own without any kind of guidance, when they're making their own rules and making their own decisions without some sort of guidance, the results aren't very impressive. This is not a very pretty place to live, in case some of you hadn't noticed. It gets pretty dismal if you read the newspaper. If you watch the news on TV, I can't stand to watch the news on TV anymore. It just drives you nuts, you know, especially at least on the main channels. It just, good grief, everything is either a fire or a murder, or a fire or a murder. I mean, it's one or the other, and it alternates, right? Then there's the murder that took place because of the fire, and the fire that took place to cover the murder. I mean, it's just all these things. Well, you know, it's nothing to really joke about, I suppose. However, the fact is that life is not, man has not been extraordinarily successful at running his own life. All we have to do is open our eyes, and we know that. So, we turn to God. And we've been talking about the result, the consequences of Adam and Eve's fateful choice in the Garden of Eden. And we spent a couple weeks on what God had to say about the life of the woman as a result of that particular error. And as we said, that error was not, it wasn't that, oh, this is the final punishment, and we need to make sure we keep that in mind. I want to keep repeating this because it's really important. Most of us, I think, kind of have a warped view or distorted view of what happened in the Garden of Eden. We like to sit around and blame Eve, you know, and blame Adam and blame the serpent and all. And it's such a strange story anyway that it's just, you know, we get a lot of opinions that arise. Well, the fact is that any of us who had been in that in that environment would have, when God said, don't touch that, would have had an insatiable desire to touch that. That's the way we are. If we don't think we're that way, have a child. And then tell that child, don't touch that button on that television. Don't touch that. Don't get into that cookie jar sitting there on the table. Hey, that's the nature of human beings. I don't know why God made us this way, but He did. All right, well, maybe it has to do with the independence that He's given us, which in itself is a remarkable act of creation, independence. But we won't get into that because I'd have to speculate, and that wouldn't be of any value. So anyway, He said some things to Eve, and he's saying some things to Adam. And last week we talked about the first thing He said to Adam, and which is often not considered, often not harped on, other than in jest, and that was, Adam, you listen to your wife. And so we talked about that last week and what the implications were of that, and tried to deal with and understand the role of the man as given in the Scripture and his responsibility before God for spiritual leadership in that home. And that's an important issue. So we went through that. Maybe you can kind of shut the door back there so we get the reverberation down there. All right, there we go. Thank you, Josh. But now God goes on and He says, look, this is what's going to happen, buddy. And we're reading in Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. And we'll take it from the top. And to Adam He said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, and for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Those are pretty famous words. A lot of people in this world have heard these words through the centuries. In fact, there's a lot of expressions that, even in the English language, that have come out of this whole collection of writings about what happened in the Garden of Eden. But here we need to understand what's going on and what this means to us today as we're trying to live our lives. In one sense, this is particularly difficult for us Americans to swallow, especially here in the late 20th century. It wasn't so bad a couple hundred years ago, or even 100 years ago. It wasn't quite so difficult. In fact, it wasn't difficult to swallow at all. It was just part of the thing, part of the way things were. People accepted it. They accepted it in part, and probably largely, because there was indeed the, at least in Western culture, the dominant view that, yeah, we can learn about what life is about through what God says and apply it. Western culture has become head and shoulders beyond, in at least prosperity, the Eastern cultures. Generally speaking, a few exceptions here and there, like Singapore, you know, a few places that are rather remarkable in their progress. But generally speaking, the Western world has had immense prosperity compared to what we call today the Third World. And we look at that and say, well, gee, why is this, why is that? Now, I don't know whether it's true, but it may be more than just circumstantial that there was such a dominant influence of the Bible in shaping Western culture. I don't know if that's the explanation or not, but the fact is that 100 years ago, everybody knew that life was not going to be a whole lot more than working yourself to the bone. A little bit of relaxation here and there, and generally speaking, people did try to kick back on Sundays, or at least one day of the week. But even the Ten Commandments, I mean, a lot of people forget about this, but Ten Commandments, I mean, these are on the wall of the Supreme Court, I think it is, or is it the Hall of Records? I think it's the Supreme Court. Let's see, let me turn to Exodus chapter 20 here. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, we've talked about this before when we were talking about God resting on the seventh day. But, most people understand that. But what's the next verse say? 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God, and in it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male or female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. And then goes on, says, for the Lord made things in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. Well, that's kind of we think about that. But, you know, if we were writing that today, we'd say, well, 4 days you shall do your labor and all your work, and on the long weekend you should rest, right? Well, and not really rest. I mean, rest is in quotes. What we really mean by that is you recreate. and in the 4 days, you work to get your RV or your jet ski or whatever it is. And it's on that long weekend that you use those to the fullness and do whatever it takes to pollute the environment. You know, this is why this kind of is hard for us today. I mean, the fact is, he says 6 days you shall labor. 6 days? Come on now. I mean, the unions were able to fight back for a 40-hour work week here, just not too many years ago. And some were even getting successful at moving it back to 37 and a half. 6 days? Well, in a lot of ways, I think of us Americans as being a bunch of kids in a candy store. I hate to say it that way, but that's the way it is. I mean, we got a lot of goodies available to us. I mean, everywhere we look, there's goodies. And we've got appetites for those goodies, and we're going for those goodies, and they're there, and we're going to find a way to get them. And that's just kind of the way things are. And we're going to find a way to retire when we're 50, or we're going to find a way to retire when we're 55 at the latest. I mean, come on. I want to get out there and do something. Or we're going to find a way to work 4 days a week, or we're going to find a way to work 3 days a week, or two. Hey, that'd be great. This is, it's a thing that's in our heads. Now, I'm not saying that is necessarily evil in itself. All I'm saying is that, that's part of man, and sure, nobody wants to work. I mean, why should we want to work? Okay, some of us are a little bit weird and get these kind of workaholic tendencies that get to us. I'll grant that. But the fact is, in our more lucid moments, we don't want to work. That's what he calls it, toil. In fact, the Greek word that's used there, the Hebrew word, is exactly the same word that's used for what Eve was cursed with in bringing forth children. Now talk about toil. We're talking about toil. Whether it's in the actual birth process or whether it's in raising, the aftermath. And the aftermath has got to be far worse. I mean, the fact is that it's tough. Life is tough. The word toil, which means extreme labor, in fact, some places it's translated sorrow. That's tough. In fact, the King James translated it sorrow. That's a tough translation, and yet there's some elements of that in that word. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. And nobody wants to go skipping into a painful life. None of us do. But, welcome to reality. This is the way it is. Now, if we're wise, we will listen to what God says and we'll go with the flow of what God gives in our lives. Anxiety in life is not so much having hard things happen to you. It's your attitude in dealing with them. It's how you deal with the onslaught of the events of life that are not pleasant. The beauty of what God has given us, and especially from the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, is that we have available to every one of us every day the opportunity to put it in God's hands and say, all right, God, I don't know what's going on, and I don't like this, but help me just to do what you want me to do. Help me to bear what you've given me in this life. Help me to deal with this lot that I am facing every day. We've said this some, I think, and maybe we've said this the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure, but the fact is that if we're looking for satisfaction in our lives by assuring that the circumstances all meet our needs or meet our wants, then we will never, ever be satisfied. We've been joking about that at work in the last week or so. There's one particular department that, in fact, that's our field service department that has certain things that would make it easier for them to service the product that we are developing. And so we've been joking lately, okay, a particular fellow that represents that department's name's Ed also. And sometimes that causes some confusion, but that's all right. So we'll often say, okay, Ed, yeah, we'll put in that feature, and then you'll be happy, right? And of course, no. No way. And that's the way life is. We're never going to be happy if we're looking for our happiness or our satisfaction from the affairs of life. That's the irony of the whole thing. The very things that we long for are the very things that once we get them, we wonder why we long for them so badly. Or it just wasn't quite right. And wait, that's not the way I longed for it. I mean, I wanted it to be this way. It's kind of like marriage, you know. A guy or a gal just dreams about what marriage is going to be like and everything. Oh, it's going to be exactly this way. And then they find that perfect mate. Okay, let's pretend. And they... And they get married and think, and there's always something that's just not quite right, you know? Well, why is this? I mean, he snores. Or, he does, this thing she wears in her hair at night. It's just not appealing, you know? Or things just happen one thing after another. And the fact is that the dreams aren't fulfilled. So what do? Well, unfortunately, a lot of people go and try to find a new dream or find a new fulfillment to the dream. But what should we do? We should get rid of our stupid dreams and get rid of our foolish, childish expectations for all the elements of life and instead listen to God. And if we align our expectations for life with what God has said, we can do okay. Life can be pretty good, actually. Not easy. Life is never easy. Never easy. Jesus said that I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. Well, the abundance of life that He modeled for us was such total fulfillment in life that He could die on the cross and that be okay. Now that's gruesome. I don't like that thought myself. I don't like him. I don't like some of the things that we've had to deal with in raising our teenagers. I don't like some of the things that I've had to deal with in raising myself. I don't like some of the things I've had to deal with in my career. I don't like having to work all the time. There's a lot of things I don't like. But that's irrelevant. What we like is not important. What we like changes day to day. It doesn't really, it's not dependable at all. And it's all based on improper assumptions anyway, things that just don't really quite make sense. So what do? We align with God. God says, this is the way life is, Adam. It ain't pretty, but this is what it is. And why? Because, hey, you're a sinner, buddy. And we don't like to use those words, you know, sinner. Oh, no, how can you call me a sinner? Hey, the fact is, he made a big mistake. He didn't stay aligned with what God said he should do. Okay, that meant he was basically a sinner. That was his nature. And because of his nature, life was going to have to be hard. Now, I don't know exactly why God did this, but I can guess a little bit. Because most of us, when we have idle time, don't do very well with it. Most of us kind of, you know, it's the old adage, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. Well, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. A lot of truth to that. That's one thing we've tried to deal with our children. As the youngest is now starting college, and she's going to kind of ease into it a little bit, and I say, hey, look, you can ease into it. That's fine. But you're going to work also. If you're going to ease into that, you're going to work. Why? Because you can't have too much idle... You shouldn't have too much idle time. If you got too much idle time, you don't do well with it. Human beings don't. That's just the way we are. 6 days. Good grief. That's a lot. My cousin is a... one of my cousins is a missionary in Chile, and got his last little newsletter. They've actually just started there, and he's telling us a little bit about the culture there. And they're right in Santiago. I mean, they're big, which is a big city. And he just sent some of the facts about Santiago, Chile, and I think there's some things that are rather interesting here. He says the monthly average family income is $1,341 a month. Now that's pretty good. That's pretty good. In fact, it's apparently the most prosperous of the countries down in South America, as I'm told. And I read that and I thought, whoa, these guys are really doing pretty well, you know. 71% own a car. Again, surprising. 80% have a telephone. Average home size, well, okay, in our standards, we may have a little trouble with this, 700 square feet. But again, compared to a lot of places on this earth, that's pretty good. 21% are in the middle class. I wish he had said what the growth rate is, because that's, of course, the secret to prosperity, or at least political stability in most countries, is a vibrant middle class. But listen to this. In their pursuit of, my cousin's words, in their pursuit of material goals, they have very little time for spiritual things. They typically work 12, 13 hours a day, 6 days a week. Now, you would find a very similar... So there's some prosperity there. Now, we today would say, hey, these people are just getting to a point where they're able to live the life they're entitled to. That's our American mindset, isn't it? Life they're entitled to. A lot of other people in the world that don't have anywhere near that and yet also work 12, 13, 16-hour days, 6 days a week, and some 7 days a week in many of the Asian countries. It's tough out there. It's real tough. I see in our society a big change as well, especially in the last 5 years. Now, that's not necessarily bad. We certainly saw that in the automobile industry. Automobile industry was kind of going along, and things were good. And you know, if you were an auto worker, you could really make a good living and nice retirement and everything else, and really a nice thing. Unfortunately, the way we had set it up, it got to the point where our cars were real expensive, and the quality was relatively low, and compared to the international competition, we couldn't compete. Well, industry dug in, and I'm actually very proud of America for this. I mean, it's to give a little cheer for America here, because what we did is we said, whoa, wait a minute, let's wake up. We revamped a lot of our practices, tried to learn from some of those who were doing it better, and now I believe we're actually on the road to doing things better than our competition. And I think that's great, and there's a lot of ways that is very true across our economy. And our economy has recovered, and we're going pretty well, going quite well. Who knows what's going to happen in the future, but we're continuing to develop. Americans have had to learn how to work again. And the 40-hour work week has kind of gone by the wayside. It's rare. It's rare now. And our pays haven't increased a whole lot. But we're having to work. Okay, well, maybe we're joining a little more of the rest of the world in having to work for a living. God says this is the way it is. We might as well accept it. Go with it. And understand what God is doing. Now, I have to balance this against some things that are very important. Because, see, on the one hand, we can say all the things we just said. And it's true. If we recognize that and accept the lot of man, then we'll spend our time learning how to cope with it rather than trying to get rid of it. That's an important point. Spend the energy learning how to cope, not getting rid of it. Now, the way we cope with it is of course an important issue. If one doesn't have Christ, then coping takes a lot of different forms. And you get all kinds of different religious expressions and philosophies transcendental meditation approaches, and there's all kinds of things that people try to do to cope. We have quite a growing, population of alternative kind of spiritual experiences. It's actually been growing since the 60s, but it seemed to quiet down a little bit. Now it's kind of growing up again. You get these, it's kind of like, I don't know if I mentioned this before, it's this bumper sticker. I don't know if you've seen this, but the bumper sticker, it says, having to do with this event down in San Diego of the people with the purple smocks or whatever those things were that they wore on their deathbeds. Anyway, it says, bumper sticker said, so many idiots, so few comets. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I'm maybe a little uncharitable there, but the fact is, if you're trying to learn to cope with life without Christ, there's all kinds of schemes you can try to use, and believe me, all of them are lame. I mean, some kind of work and some don't work. Most of them don't work at all, but some kind of have a little bit of help in them. But why not just go to the real thing? I mean, people like to dance around spirituality. You know, I'm a spiritual person, but I'm open-minded, you know. Dance around it, but very few people who will give you that line are open to Jesus Christ. They're open-minded to everything else, but don't talk to them about Jesus Christ. No way. Whoa. Hey, come on. Yeah, you're one of those. You must be part of the religious right. You hate everybody. You know, well, come on. I mean, that's not truth. But it is the way things often work. Well, Jesus gave a rather important principle here in Matthew chapter 6. Actually, I'm going to turn to Luke's version of the same passage. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. He says, this is it, just after Jesus had been asked a question about dividing an inheritance. These people wanted him to be the judge over a little matter there. They had this inheritance and they wanted fairness. And they said, Jesus, will you give a judgment here? And he said, I'm not going to touch that. Come on. And then he goes in and he says, look, beware and guard yourself from greed. Because it's not in your abundance that your life consists, from your possessions. And he said a parable to them. And he said there was a certain rich man whose field had prospered. And he reasoned in himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have, I don't have where I can store my grain. And he said, I know this I'll do. I will tear down my storehouse and I'll build a greater one and I'll gather there all my grain and all my good things. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many good things laying up for many years. Rest, eat, drink, be merry. And God said to him, fool, for on this night your soul is asked of you. That which you have prepared, for whom is it? Thus it is with he who treasures up for himself, and not unto God. Treasures up his riches and not actually being wealthy unto God. And he said to his disciples, on account of this I tell you, don't be anxious for your soul, what you shall eat, or for your body, what you're going to wear. For your soul is greater than its food, and your body than its clothing. Consider the Caracas. I forgot what Caracas is. Give me a... What does it say there? What's it say?
The raven.
Okay. That says raven? Huh, okay. Consider the raven. This is the Greek word here is Caracas. They don't sow, neither do they reap. For them there is no storehouse or closet, actually. But God nourishes them. And how much greater, how much more excellent are you than the birds? Which of you, by being anxious, is able to add to his stature one cubit? And then he goes on, of course. The point is, and he goes on, he says, and he talks about the lilies of the field, they don't do anything, and yet says Solomon in all of his glory is not arrayed like those. He says, if God cares about the flowers of the field, isn't he going to care about us? These are all things that we have that we've heard. He says in verse 29, don't seek what you shall eat or what you shall drink. Right? All these things the Gentiles of this world, or the nations of this world, the non-believers are seeking. Says in verse 31, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Seek his kingdom, these things will be added to you. The fact is, yeah, life has a certain lot to it. Yes, we have to work for a living. That's the way it is. But if we see our lives as what it is that God is doing, if we look at our lives and we say, God, you take me where I need to go. You give me the job that I need to have. You help me have the right attitude when I'm in my job. Help me to move with a spirit that says, God's taking care of me. My job is just to go according to His will. Then we're going to do fine. And we'll be at peace. We've got to balance these issues. And the Scripture gives us a lot a lot to balance. It's complicated. But it isn't complicated if we say our focus as believers, our opportunity as believers, is to put ourselves in the hand of God, go with Him each day, know that life consists of a lot of pain, a lot of toil, a lot of heartache, but if it's in the hand of God, I'm going to be okay. If we look for our own interpretation of how things can be good, we will never be satisfied. If we instead spend our energy saying, how can I be aligned with God, your will, and accept what He says as part of His will, life's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. But we'll stop there.